Money FM 89.3, best of prime time. In the spotlight on Money FM 89.3.
You're listening to Prime Time on Money FM 89.3 with Rachel Kelly and Timothy Goh. And now it's time to catch up with our friends at the BBC for the headlines they're watching in the week ahead.
And Rich Preston is joining us, of course, from London. Rich, good morning to you. It should be morning there. I was about to say good evening. But Rich, this week we have the members of the Association of Southeast Asian Nations meeting for a regional summit. Is this a big deal for the international community?
Yeah, it is, Timothy. And it's not about who is going to be there. This is all about who's not going to be there. And of course, by that, I'm referring to Myanmar. Now, a couple of weeks ago, as you know, the other member states said that a representative of the military junta would not be welcome at the summit. That's an unprecedented step for ASEAN, and it didn't go down well with Myanmar. They say they're disappointed that they're not going to be invited, particularly because General Min Aung Hlaing saw this as an opportunity to get some international recognition for his military government. You know, President Joe Biden's going to be involved in the talks, and, you know, that international recognition really isn't going to happen now. Of course, this is all to do with the military coup. The United Nations says 1,000 civilians have been killed. You know, these protests still being violently repressed by the military government. And there's a real concern in the international community that the only organization that can make a difference is the ASEAN. When Myanmar joined the ASEAN in 1997, it was under military rule at the time. And it was generally considered that bringing Myanmar into the group would put slow, you know, democratic, diplomatic pressure on the military to end the rule and lead to elections. That happened. You know, it arguably worked. And Myanmar, internationally, has seen as a bit of an ASEAN success story. Then, of course, this military takeover, these protests, these killings. And I think the international community was generally supportive when the other member states decided not to invite the military junta to these talks. And it's going to be watching carefully to see the reaction that has and whether it makes a difference to how the government, the military government in Myanmar, runs the country.
And that said, Rich, what are you going to be looking out for then from the ASEAN meetings this week?
Well, we're particularly going to be looking out for the potential split in the ASEAN members on the Myanmar front. Now, when it came to rejecting the military junta for these talks, there was a bit of a split. Indonesia, Malaysia, the Philippines, Brunei and Singapore wanted this outcome. They didn't want a representative from the junta at the talks. Other countries did, most notably Myanmar's neighbours, Thailand and Laos. So whilst Myanmar is not going to be at these talks, the situation in Myanmar is going to be high on the agenda, with the other foreign ministers and the other national leaders discussing how the bloc acts in regards to Myanmar and whether it takes any further steps in intervening in Myanmar's domestic politics. And of course, the presence of people like Joe Biden, that will be on the agenda as well. So that's the kind of stuff we're going to be looking out for.
Moving on, Rich, let's talk about the COVID-19 situation there in the UK. Of course, Singapore has opened up to a vaccinated travel lane, including the UK, starting this month. So with the UK, though, recording higher COVID-19 cases, I believe 39,000 on Sunday, what is happening there?
Yeah, so these rising cases, rising hospitalizations are a serious concern, in part because, as you mentioned, other countries have just started to open up to us. You know, as of November the 8th, we can travel to America again. We recently, as you mentioned, allowed to travel to Singapore again. There's a concern that if our cases continue to rise, other countries will close us down, keep us out of the loop once more. Senior government scientific advisors here are urging the government to do more, especially in England, bring in some tighter restrictions, what's being called a Plan B. The government has pushed back on that and has said it's not necessary. Now, one of the reasons this is a particular concern is because obviously we're coming into winter. There's a traditional pressure on the health service with you know, flu rates and that kind of thing. The government has pushed back on that and has said that's not necessary. Now, last year, it did the same thing. We were promised that there would be no lockdown over Christmas. And then cases really spiraled out of control. And just a few days before Christmas, the government had to bring in a lockdown. So even though the government on this occasion says, don't worry, there will not be a lockdown Christmas, everyone has a memory of last year and is fearful that it could happen even at the last minute. Now, what is interesting is that the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine has put out a report over the last day which says that it expects the numbers to fall even if there's no lockdown. It's put together this model of cases and hospitalizations and says that even if there are no restrictions, it actually expects numbers to fall before winter. So the government's obviously using that as a reason to not implement restrictions.
So a case of deja vu then perhaps, Rich, in the UK?
Yes, absolutely. And the thing is, you know, this is something we're following across Europe. You know, Italy has Europe's second highest death toll after the UK. Their cases are going up. They now have mandatory vaccine passports that you need on public transport and in many workplaces. The number's going up in France. The number's going up in Poland. And in Russia, for 5 days straight, it's hit new records of hospitalizations and deaths. And the government is bringing in lockdown restrictions in the capital, Moscow, there. Now, Russia was one of the first countries to develop a vaccine, but only a third of Russians have had a dose of the vaccine. It's one of the lowest rates in Europe, so we're keeping an eye on Russia as well.
We're speaking with Rich Preston, senior journalist and presenter at the BBC. Now, Rich, we've been talking a lot about this on the show over the last two weeks or more, I should say. And on Sunday, COP26 is getting underway in Glasgow. News coverage has been building up, I'm sure, across the globe as well. But what is COP26 and what exactly are we looking to get out of it?
Now, the easiest way to think about COP26, Rachel, is it is the sequel to the Paris Climate Conference of 2015. Now, that was the conference, COP21 it was called, where all world leaders got together and agreed that they would implement measures to reduce global warming. The target was under 2 degrees, but an aim of under 1.5 degrees Celsius. Now, under the Paris Agreement, every country is committed to making a national plan as to how it reduces its emissions. These are known as nationally determined contributions, or NDCs. Now, remember that because you will hear a lot about NDCs over the coming 2 weeks. Every country signed up to the agreement. Even North Korea and Syria signed up to the agreement. And, of course, there was big news when Donald Trump pulled the US out of the Paris Climate Accord when he was president. Joe Biden has since signed America back up to the agreement. The deal in Paris was that these plans would be reviewed every 5 years. So COP26 in Glasgow is the first opportunity to look at how these plans are going. The problem is, it's widely accepted that the plans made in Paris didn't go far enough. So at COP26, there's going to be an expectation that countries will be more decisive, harder, firmer, and more drastic on reducing their carbon emissions. Now, there are three specific goals we're looking for from COP26. One is these NDCs, each country coming forward with plans on reducing its emissions. The second is finalizing the Paris rulebook. Those are the rules that each country will stick to in order to implement the Paris Agreement. There's strong focus there on collaboration between government and the public and private sectors. And a third one is funding. Now, that was a really big deal because generally the big carbon emitters are the developed countries, but the ones that suffer most from climate change are the developing countries. So they said to the developed countries, we need you guys to stump up some cash to help us implement our own changes, but also to deal with things like extreme weather events. So at COP26, there's going to be a look for repeated reassurance from the developed world and potentially a promise of more funding. So things get underway in Glasgow on Sunday.
Wonderful. And fun fact, Rich, did you know they've released a COP26 whiskey?
Specifically
for delegates. I was very disappointed. It's specifically for delegates. There are only 900 bottles that are going to be given out at the event. So there we go. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. It's always a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Rich Preston, senior journalist and presenter at the BBC. You're listening to Money FM 89.3.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg. Or download our audio app. That's AWEDIO. Available on Google Play or the App Store.